one of the easiest gestures of kindness.
All right.
Last unit for our next exam is the legislature. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a little bit of state legislatures in general. And I suppose it also could, to a degree, apply to Congress. And then we're going to get a little more specific and we're going to focus on the great, in general, court. Does anybody have any questions about what we covered last class? Started talking a little bit about the framework of the Constitution. All right. Well, as somebody said last class, I think it was Marcos, the legislature is the lawmaking branch. That is their primary function. Again, the founding fathers, the Sons of Liberty, they argued no taxation without representation. So essentially, the purpose of the legislature is to be the representatives of the people. But in fact, legislatures, be it state legislatures, be it Congress, heck, be it town meeting, because your town meeting are your local legislative branches, they all, generally speaking, engage in three functions. What I have to give you, I kind of lifted from the textbook. This could be found in the legislative chapter. I have a reference that it starts on 114, but I don't know if that's the right number because I don't know what edition of the text that I got that number from. All right, what are the three basic functions? Well, function number one is making policy. State policy. National policy. We talked about policy briefly in the beginning. What is policy? Does anyone remember? Policy? Policy is essentially kind of like the way to do things. It's like a guideline, if you will. Of course, legislatures make policies by making laws. They literally tell us the thou shalls and the thou shall nots. Although laws that come from the legislative branch are commonly referred to as statutes. Statutes with a T. We're not talking about statues. Now, ultimately, a law is a rule of behavior that comes from the government. It is telling us what we can and we cannot do. And it also lays out how we should go about doing things. But don't forget, in addition to the statutes which come from the legislature, there's also laws that come from the courts. There's also regulations and rules that come from the bureaucratic agencies. So we have in our society laws upon laws upon laws. So just don't think that the legislatures have a monopoly on making law. Now, in many states, state legislatures also have the authority to make constitutions. Again, our state is different. The people of our state denied our legislative body the power to make a constitution. They demanded that it came from a convention of delegates who were not in office. In other words, they didn't want government telling us how government should be. They wanted the people to design it. But that's not the case in the vast majority of states. Of most of the states, the majority of states that were incorporated prior to 1900, I think every single one is on their second or their third constitution. Pretty much whenever the people in government decide that the constitution's not working, they write a new one. Or they're empowered to amend it. But fortunately, when John Adams wrote our Constitution, there was a distrust of government in general. So we already laid out the process of amendment. Yes, the general court can do it, but ultimately it's going to go before the people. Or the people can make a proposal. And it takes many years to do it. That's not the case in other states. Now, I'm not going to waste your time saying look up all 50 states and figure out how it's done. Just remember that most, make it simple, most allow the legislatures to do that. Legislative branches can also shape policy because they control the purse strings. The old saying, the power of the purse. Every legislative branch in our country controls taxes and spending. The very same is true with your town meeting. It's town meeting that has to authorize spending articles. It's town meeting that has to authorize your budget, your town budget. The town can't spend money without the legislative branch, the people, and town meeting approve it. Of course, if you live in a city, the city council does that function. At the state level, it's the general court, and at the national level, it's Congress. This is one of the things that we inherited from England, going all the way back to the Magna Carta, the Great Charter, when King Stephen was humbled by the barons and forced to acknowledge that Parliament controls the purse strings. So this, of course, involves both sides. Taxation is where the government gets its money, and appropriations is their spending. Under our state constitution, under the constitutions of all the states, in Congress, spending cannot be done unless appropriated by the legislature. By the way, although the two people that have problems when I use modern examples aren't here right now, that's what's going on down in D.C. right now. The shutdown. There's an argument over the budget, or actually it's not really a full budget, but it's how Congress is going to spend the money. The Republicans want to cut government spending because we're $37 trillion in debt, and the Democrats want to increase spending. So ultimately, the Republicans forced it through the House because they have a majority, but in order for it to pass the Senate, you need 60 votes. And while three or four Democrats have crossed over, they still need, I think, two more in order to basically reopen the government. In other words, to appropriate, to spend the money. Of course, the shitty thing, pardon my language, when the Democrats and the Republicans play these games, and by the way, they've been doing this since, I think, the last person to be president when Congress actually passed a budget did it the right way.
It might have been Bill Clinton.
Or maybe they passed the budget when George W. Bush was in there. But since that time, the Democrats and Republicans have just been fighting, and they use what's called continuing resolutions. In other words, they actually don't vote specifically on how to declare how the money's going to be spent. They're voting just to continue to spend.
All right, questions so far?
The second job is to be our representatives.
Legislatures are designed to be filled literally with the representatives of the people.
We elect these men and women to go into the legislative branch to basically serve us.
As John Adams said, and I quote, "The greatest care should be employed in constituting this representative assembly. It should be in miniature an exact portrait of the people at large. It should think, feel, reason, and act like them. That it may be the interest of this assembly to do strict justice at all times, it should be an equal representation. Or in other words, equal interest among the people should have an equal interest in it."
In other words, you should be voting for those men and women who represent you. So that when they go to Boston or they go down to Washington, D.C., they are there representing their constituents, the people who put them in office.
But the problem is, who is actually being represented?
Remember, our system was designed without being aware of partisanship. Our founding fathers, I don't want to say naively, because they just didn't understand the modern political parties, but they made a system where they believed that we, the voters, would only elect the best and brightest. Again, what I said at the beginning, they looked to Plato in Plato's discussion of philosophical kings. They believed that ultimately we would elect the people that had the highest moral clarity, that were the most accomplished, you know, that essentially were caring and loving of the people. They never foresaw that the D's would only be for the D's and the R's would only be for the R's, and they would never compromise, and they would be battling out because the E's think they're the, I mean, the R's think they're the best and the D's. They never foresaw this.
Because at the end of the day, when you pay attention to what's going on
in Beacon Hill, we have a super majority. We are basically a one-party state. The Democrats control everything. So when things are going wrong, you would think that the people would say, we don't want the D's anymore. But the problem is in Massachusetts, the R's are just as bad as the D's. That's the reason why the vast majority of people in Massachusetts are unenrolled. We don't call them independent. When you register to vote, they don't sign up to be a Democrat or a Republican.
Isn't it becoming more that way, like, all over the country, and that's why the founding fathers are actually against the two-party system?
They were against the idea of party to begin with.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a two-party system.
It's just like a system based on parties.
Because what do parties do? And by the way, they did talk about parties. What do parties do? By their very nature, they divide us. It's my team versus your team. They wanted people to focus on being an American, to do what's best for America, our citizens, take care of our needs. Not the, we're going to vote for the donkeys or the elephants. Because right there means half and half. Although actually today, I don't know, from what I've seen, I know in Massachusetts it's mostly, as far as those people who are enrolled in a party, it's mostly Democrats. I think it's like 40, 30, 10 or something like that. But if you look nationally, I don't think we've hit the tipping point where most people are independent or unenrolled, but we're getting there. Although, from what I've read nationally, the Republicans now have a slight advantage over the Democrats, but it's only by like 1 or 2%. So basically, those people who are trapped being partisan, you know, aren't giving any ground, but more and more people are just saying, yeah, I don't want to be part of it.
Do you think things like ranked choice voting could like help that?
No, that's the worst thing. That's awful.
Are there any other, like, I don't know, propositions for how to, like, take voting out of just, like, you vote for a Democrat or Republican?
It's got to go back to the people. Think of the messages that were enshrined in our Constitution. It's up for the people to be informed. You can't go in and automatically pull the ballot for a D just because you like the Ds and you think the Ds are good. You've got to take a step back and say, is that person who has a D, are they the best person for the job?
So how is ranked choice voting? Like, how is it bad?
Because what has been happening is the Democrats have been using that to take over because they run 5 Democrat candidates against like 1 Republican. And so if you're more inclined to vote for a Democrat, you're going to pick all the Democrats over the Republican. That's how Maine, which was once a Republican state, has flipped to being mostly a Democrat state. We'll talk about jungle primaries. We'll talk about ranked choice voting when we do the elections. Me, I'm glad it got shot down in Massachusetts. But again, we can differ on that, but we'll talk about it when we do elections. All right, so getting back to this. So think about it. When you put somebody into that state legislature or the national legislature, are they going to represent you? Or are they going to represent their party? And what happens when the Republicans want something that could be harmful to the constituency of an elected Republican? Do they focus on their constituents or do they only vote by the party? And by the way, there are analysts that track the votes of every elected man and woman in Congress. And you have the ability to actually do a Google search and you can see how partisan they are. Or are they mavericks and they have a tendency to vote across the aisle? John Fetterman, who I'm becoming more and more impressed with, state Democrat from Pennsylvania. More and more he's talking about compromise and collaboration and working across the aisle. In other words, trying to do what's best for the people as opposed to the party. Unfortunately, in Massachusetts, the Democrats generally have no need to work across the aisle. They have such large majorities in the House and in the state Senate that they don't even do roll call votes. That's a procedural thing. In order to call for a roll call, I think the Republicans would need to have 30% of the seats, but they don't even have that. Out of the 200 elected officials, I think there's only 30 Republicans in both chambers. But the Republicans have done it to themselves. It's crazy. Really crazy. When you consider, as recent as the 1960s, we were a Republican state. And then we became a purple state. And that's the best state to live in, by the way, to be honest with you. I wouldn't want to live in a blue, like a blood red state either. I like the purple states. Because if you have close, then it forces both sides to work together. It forces both sides to try to compromise. But that's me. right. Yes.
What are like some examples of like purple states today? Are there any left?
Yeah. Yeah. The seven so-called swing states. So like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin,
Florida?
Virginia. No, Florida has just gone very, very far red because so many Republicans have left states from like New York and moved down there. Thank you. All right, the third job of the state legislatures is oversight. So they're supposed to make policy. They're supposed to represent the people. But they are also tasked with overseeing the government operations itself. How is this done? Through hearings, through investigations. They're not supposed to just be making rash decisions. So, for example, if they're contemplating a new statute, a change in the law, they're supposed to hold hearings and bring in so-called experts. And they need to investigate if we actually need to change the law. How far do we need to change the law? Maybe we should scrap the law. Maybe we should make a new law. Basically, they're supposed to gather the facts behind the legislation. They're also supposed to look at the state agencies or the federal agencies. Are they running efficiently? Or is there a lot of waste? I think it was when... No, I think it was... It wasn't... I think it was when Father Bush was president. George H.W. Bush. Might have been Reagan. I don't remember. But there was an investigation done by Congress. And they discovered that the Pentagon was buying toilet seats at a time when you could go to like a hardware store and pick up a toilet seat for your own house for like $20. They were spending like $4,000 on toilet seats. Well, there's no justification for spending $4,000 of taxpayer money on a toilet seat. Because you're taking the money from the people. It was a big to-do. It was all over the news. Anytime you hear about government waste, you know, people are like, what the heck? You know, why are we spending billions of dollars to study the breeding habits of, like, the northern tadpoles? Actually, they're frogs. But you know what I'm saying? Our government just wastes so much money.
Well, is it correct that we spend the most money on military and war?
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Our military budget has been dwarfed with welfare entitlement programs. It's close. Yeah.
So what is the current breakdown like?
What?
Of like our budget, our spending budget. I
don't know. They haven't passed the budget, as I mentioned when you were out of the room.
Well, yeah.
The United States government hasn't passed the budget. I'm pretty sure it was when George W. Bush was president. Might have been Obama in the beginning, but there was no actual budget passed from Trump 1, Biden, Trump 2. They're not even trying to pass a budget now. They're just doing continued spending. A continuing resolution, it's called. So there are numbers online that show you the breakdown federally. I think there's also, you can do a Google search, and I think you can get the state numbers as well. In Massachusetts, I believe, I don't know about the state level. I know in most towns, the biggest line item in a town's budget is schools. The school system in our town is currently consuming roughly 56% of our budget.
What's the point of not passing a budget? Like, why would the people in Congress vote against passing a budget? Like, what's the benefit to not pass the budget?
Accountability.
Okay.
Because if you actually pass a budget document contains basically the numbers for every program, every facet, every asset that you are spending money on. And if you are going to increase the budget, you're going to vote for an increase. That also means you're essentially voting for either more deficit spending or increased taxes. And the men and women in Congress do not have the courage to do that anymore. So instead, they're basically continuing whatever the budget was the last time it was passed. And they've been doing this for nearly 20 years. So in essence, they're not looking to save money. They're not looking to justify money. They're just looking to continue to spend.
And like additionally right now, the Democrats don't like federally have any power because Republicans are in all three branches. And like in Congress, they have majority in both. So, and also even when the Democrats do have a majority, they don't really get shit done. So refusing to pass the spending bill and like them taking a stand is their way of trying to be like, no, we're fighting for more healthcare protection because they're saying that we'll only sign it if the Republicans, like if you don't decrease the healthcare spending budget. Yeah. They could go other ways of trying to like, go about that, but they just don't because they're really bad at like doing things.
Yeah, they picked a really bad line in the sand to die on.
I know. I'm really surprised that like out of everything that's happening, like healthcare is the only one thing that we're willing.
Part of the problem is from my understanding is what they're trying to stop is the government has been subsidizing the healthcare costs for people who can't afford it, which is Obamacare and illegal immigrants.
Yeah, I know that that's like the argument against it.
Right.
Which I mean, like that's like the whole immigration debate, which is like a whole thing, but just like. American citizens, even just looking at that, like that's like a lot of people who like they depend on that healthcare.
Right, but see what happens is if you cut off that money, that's going to lead to the next argument to get rid of Obamacare.
Exactly.
And Obamacare is the reason why healthcare is so expensive.
Well, it's also just the reason why like a lot of people can be on healthcare.
Yeah, but it's also the reason why healthcare is so expensive, because contained in health Obamacare. Are rules that all insurance companies must follow. They basically had the federal government design all of the government policies.
Yeah.
Whereas back in the day, you could tailor your healthcare policies based on your actual physical needs. So if you were young, you could get away with a very cheap healthcare, just basically catastrophic insurance. And as you got older, you could pay more based on, you know, the increased need. But now everyone has to get the same services. Whether you need it or not.
I think it's just crazy that an industry like providing healthcare, like insurance, is like so profit driven, like over the goal of like actually providing healthcare. So.
Well, it's profit driven because that's the only way to keep the businesses in operation.
Yeah, I know. I wish we didn't make it a business.
Yeah, but the problem is then who would want to be a doctor?
Well, I mean, a lot of people. I mean, other countries who don't have a capitalist based medical system do have.
And what is their goal?
To
come over here and become doctors over here so they get the big paychecks.
Sometimes.
Very frequently. I can't tell you the last time I actually had an American doctor. All the doctors that I've had for the last 20 years, I'm not saying they're bad, but I've had doctors from Africa, I've had doctors from Asia. They're all great. I loved them. But they're not Americans. And I've asked them, why are you here? Oh, because they can come over here and make more money. And who doesn't want to make more money to take better care of their families?
Yeah, there's also a lot of people who need care here, so I think there's a lot of like a...
But again, if the government wasn't involved, healthcare would be cheaper. Look at the costs. Okay, again, I remember when everything happened. In Massachusetts, we started with Romney Care. That's when the state started mandating regulations on the insurance companies. My insurance costs tripled. In a year because of a mandate. Then Obamacare came in and it doubled and it's since doubled again. It's all because of government regulation. Gotta get the government out. That will cause prices to go down. All right, so investigation. How do they do it?
Hearings. Hearings. You ever want to have fun? Put on the C-SPANs. The C-SPANs typically carry the hearings. And why do I say why you want to have fun? Because the hearings often are clown shows. Actually, truth be told, they're kind of embarrassing. Because depending upon who's in power, which party is in power, you get theatrics. So, for instance, we now have a Republican president. So whenever there's a hearing, a congressional hearing, the Republicans, because they control a majority in both chambers, they have Republican chairman. So if they ever call in a Republican from the administration, all of the Republicans give them softball questions. But then the Democrats go to the opposite extreme in trying to attack, try to belittle, try to condescend. And by the way, if you use your YouTube and you go back and check out hearings when the partisan makeup was reversed, the Democrats would give the softballs to the Democrats and attack. It's a game that they play. And the hard thing is those hearings are supposed to be we the people's ability to understand what's going on in government. But like everything, partisanship has just gummed up the works. So what are they supposed to do? Well, they're supposed to investigate. They have the hearings, and then based on what they learn, Congress does have the authority to essentially tell the bureaucracy how to operate. So, they have the ability, for instance, to increase environmental regulations if after the hearings there are areas that we are lax, or the opposite. They have the ability to roll back the regulations. Congress, after doing their investigations, they have the authority to increase spending to particular departments, or they can cut it if they actually pass a damn budget. So frustrating. But ultimately, they utilize the power of the purse to get things done, or not.
Got to be fair. Questions? Now, FYI, state legislatures also have hearings as well, but they're not broadcast. So you have the ability as a citizen to go to Boston on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I think that's typically when they hold their hearings. And if you go down to the ground floor under the Golden Dome, there are a bunch of hearing rooms, and you can basically go in and sit in. And if you get there early enough and sign up, you can actually speak during a hearing. When I got my special act passed that I talked about last class, I had to go speak before a legislative committee 3 times to get my measure passed. But I've gone to Boston a bunch of other times. I went and spoke when there was a hearing on the MBTA. I went and spoke when there was a hearing on the latest round of gun laws. I've gone down there when they were talking about creating POST, which if any of you want to become cops, you should definitely know about POST. I'm not special. Anybody, any citizen has the ability to do it. So just if you ever hear about, you know, they're debating something or they're holding a hearing about something you're interested or passionate about, contact your local representative or senator, say you want to speak on this, and they will add you to the docket. They'll add you to the schedule. And it's pretty cool. Although, do you want to know what the shitty thing is? You get 3 minutes. And there's a big clock. I think they had like a 52-inch TV. Oh my God. Because if you're passionate about something, you have a lot to say. You want to try to persuade.
It's hard to be articulate
and concise. Oh, it really is. It really is. So, most of the times I just go and I just, you know, do it extemporaneously. I'm not afraid to public speak. But when I was going for the special act, I did everything I could to have what I wanted to say canned so I didn't skip over everything. The first time, I got through half, and I'm like, damn it. But then the second and third times, I knew it was 3 minutes, so I practiced it, got it down to 2 minutes and 57 seconds. But the second and the third time I went, they didn't have a big docket, so the chair person, once was a man, once was a woman, they actually started asking me questions. So I did have more time, so that was pretty cool. Because that's what you want to have. You don't want to go and present yourself before this grand council. You want to have that interaction with your elected officials. So, I'm proud of the fact that I was able to get a law passed.
What was one question they asked you?
So, under Massachusetts law, members of the State National Guard who get called to active duty are allowed to get the type of abatement that I wanted to provide. And so they asked, why does Sutton want to do something different? Why do we want to give it to Marines or soldiers or airmen? And I basically said, well, if any man or woman, you know, was enlisted in military service and they get called to action, how can we discriminate between someone who's a Marine and someone who's in the National Guard? And they appreciated that. And by the way, the last time, because it died, disappeared, the last time we actually got Space Force included as well. So all six branches qualify, which is pretty cool. All right. So that's what I have for the legislature in general. Remember, the three primary functions. And again, it applies to all legislative bodies. Well, let's see if we can rip off the roof of the Golden Dome and have a better understanding of what happens there. Because it's very different than Congress, that's for sure. One, it's not even called the state legislature. Going all the way back to the first charter for Massachusetts Bay Colony, the name has remained the same. The Great and General Court. Because it was technically founded in 1629, technically, our state legislature is the oldest continually existing and serving legislative body in the United States. Simultaneously, our general court was the first body where we elected representatives, and our general court was the first body that became bicameral, two chambers. The current incarnation of the general court, though, directly correlates to the Constitution, which was passed in 1780. Oh, I did all that. All right, fine. Oh, we've talked about this before. We know how the charter was revoked. I gave you this history. Then there was the Dominion, and then I did that. All right, we did that as well. I love history. I'm sorry. All right, there we go. We'll go back to here. No, we don't care about that either. We'll go to legislative. I'll cut out the history, because I did ask you some of these questions on the first test. Legislative organization. How is our general court organized? Well, as it has been since the 1640s, we have two chambers. We have the Senate. Since its creation, the Massachusetts Senate has consisted of 40 members. Currently, each senatorial district is based on population. The goal is to make sure that each state senator has roughly the same constituents.
So, based on the 2020 census, generally speaking, each state senator has a district with a population of about 175,000 people.
Now, interestingly enough, our Constitution does put requirements to serve in the Senate.
Originally, you had to be a landowner, owning at least 60 acres of land. But they eliminated that.
But now today, you must live within your district for at least 5 years. That's one requirement. You must live within your district for 5 years. Now, by the way, you can move into your district in year four, but before you take the oath of office, that fifth year must tick by.
Our state senators serve 2-year terms. And we do not have term limits. We do not have term limits.
So, you could be a senator from the point you get in until you die.
Currently, and my numbers may be off, but I believe of the 40 senators, 35 are Democrats and 5 are Republicans.
If you live in southern Worcester County, from Milford all the way out to Southbridge, I believe, you have Ryan Fatman. If you live in Millbury and on the north of Ryan Fatman's district, you might have Michael Moore, who's a Democrat.
Oh. There is an age requirement as well. You have to be at least 18 years old. You have to be a registered voter. That's the other requirement that I should throw in. Questions? All right.
The second chamber is the House of Representatives.
By the way, guess where...
I guess Madison got the idea for the names of the two chambers of Congress.
All right. The House of Representatives generally is regarded as being the lower chamber. Although the irony is they also serve 2-year terms. It's not like the U.S. Congress, where U.S. senators serve 6-year terms. In Massachusetts, both serve 2-year terms. Now, the size of our House of Representatives has fluctuated. In 1811, it was at its largest. There were 748 members of the House of Representatives. And it was that high because 214 of them came from Maine.
How many of you knew that Maine was once part of Massachusetts? Yeah, before they essentially seceded.
But, in 1857, they decided to cap the number at 240. And it remained that way all the way up until 1978, where it was changed
to its current size of 160 members. So today, 160 senators, 160 reps, 40 senators. We have 200 men and women that serve in our great general court. Now, in terms of districts, a representative district is much smaller than the senator district. Currently, representatives have districts roughly of about 44,000 people. So that's the reason why some towns are cut or split between representatives. The one that I am most familiar with is Auburn. Auburn is cut in half. Half of Auburn goes to, no, sorry, not Auburn, Oxford. Half of Oxford goes to Paul Frost, who lives in Auburn, and the other half goes to Joe McKenna, who lives in Sutton. They change the House districts with every single census. So you may have a state representative today, and after the 2030 census, they may redistrict it. That happened to me. I was once, one third of Sutton was once in another district. That we had George Peterson from Grafton. And then they redistricted it again, and somehow we fell under Paul Frost in Auburn. Then they redistricted it again, and then suddenly we were our own town, all within another district. So they play these games all the time. Age requirement, 18 years old. You have to be a registered voter. You serve a 2-year term with no term limits. Now, I think the numbers are a little different, because I can't tell the last time I updated this. It might have been in 2023 or 2024. I can't tell. Back then I had it at 134 Democrats, 25 Republicans. I think it might be a little less after the 2024 elections, but I'm not sure. Each term begins on the first Wednesday in January following a state election. Now, FYI, because both our senators and our representatives serve 2-year terms, that means every 2 years, every even year in November, when you go into the voting booth, you have a chance to vote for your state representative and your state senator. As far as the executive officers, the governor, the lieutenant governor, those fall during what are known as the midterms, and we'll talk about that when we get to the executive branch. So you don't vote for governor the same year you vote for president. It's the in-between years. So 2026 is our next gubernatorial election year. But all terms start on the first Wednesday in January after the election. A term is 2 years, obviously, for both chambers. But each term is subdivided into sessions. Sessions last for whenever the chambers agree to be open. Now, the general court does have the ability to be shut down by the governor's council in Massachusetts. But it's very rare that the governor council intervenes and ends the session. FYI, we are one of the few legislative bodies that has a full-time elected state legislature. So generally, they are in session all year long. New Hampshire, it's a part-time gig. They shut down for several months out of every year. Massachusetts, generally, they're always in session. Now, technically, to be a little technical, in order to be in session, there must be a quorum present. What's a quorum? Anyone know what this word means? Good attempt. Anyone else? The minimum amount of numbers necessary. Now, FYI, in our state, a quorum is a majority. So, what's a majority of 160?
Eighty-one.
What's a majority of 40? 21. So that means in order for the body to be in session, there must be at least 81 representatives in the building. They don't have to be in the chamber, but they have to be in the building. Or 21 senators in the building. Now, by the way, you do have the right to visit your state senators and representatives. I go up a couple of times a year. I go visit my state senator because I've been friends with him, Ryan Fatman, since he was my selectman. Back before I even thought about running him for the school committee. And my nephew actually works for him as an intern. So I'll go up and I'll go visit my intern. And it's kind of funny. When Ryan's in his office, he's personable, he's friendly. But every now and then a call comes over the phone and he's got to run out. Because he's got to go to the chamber because he's got to go vote on something. So technically if you're in the building, you're working. Now, typically they do adjourn, they do end sessions around election time, so that way the representatives and the senators can go back to their districts and campaign, and they also tend to do it around the holidays. Because God forbid our elected officials, you know, work on a holiday. I only mention that because if you, like, work at a gas station or you work at a restaurant, you know, when was the last time you got a holiday off? Now, if the chamber is adjourned, they can get called back to hold special sessions. Special sessions are usually called during emergency times. So, say there ever was a natural disaster. Major earthquake, you know, during the week between Christmas and New Year's. Even though the general court was adjourned, chances are they would call for a special session, and as many of them as they could would rush back, you know, to be able to prepare, take emergency actions. But again, it's very rare that in Massachusetts we have special sessions because they're generally open all year long. Questions? All right. Now, another interesting and important part of our state government is the fact that there are officers. They are not all equal in the chambers. There are officers that are given certain authority to basically control the processes of each chamber. The two top positions in the Senate, you have the Senate President. They are essentially the chairperson of the Senate. And in the House, there is a Speaker of the House.
Now, by the way, these positions are different than Congress. Don't get them confused. All right.
In the Senate, the current Senate president is Karen Spilka of Ashland. Interestingly enough, the last time I taught this class, which I think was last fall, I actually had somebody in class who babysat for the Senate president's kids. That was just a weird coincidence.
She has been Senate president, I believe, for 4 years. She replaced Teresa Murray of Plymouth, who was her predecessor.
Aiding her is an honorary position called the President Pro Tempore.
Why do I refer to it as an honorary position?
Well, this position is given in recognition of the longest serving member of the chamber.
Currently, that's Williams Brownsberger of Belmont.
He's been in the state Senate, I think, for almost 30 years. Now, technically, he has no power, but he is allowed to chair sessions if the Senate president is not present. So he kind of fills in. There also are party leaders.
And the titles are not clever. Because one party has a majority, and the other party has a minority.
So obviously in Massachusetts, the current majority is the Democrats. So the leader of the Democrats in the Senate is recognized as the majority leader.
The current majority leader is Cynthia Stone of Newton.
The current minority leader, Republicans are in the minority, and have been since, I think, 1968, I think was the last time the Republicans had a majority in Massachusetts in the Senate. The one that's been the Senate minority leader since the 90s is a guy by the name of Bruce Tarr from Gloucester.
The job of the minority and the majority leader are to control the parties.
To make sure that everyone holds the party line. And again, going back to my criticism of partisanship, one of the reasons why there's so much partisan division is because they actually have recognized party leaders. And guess what the party leaders can do? They can get their members to serve on influential committees. They also can help redirect campaign funds, you know, to kind of keep the good, loyal people in office. But at the end of the day, the vast majority of members look to their leaders before casting votes. Which, again, is a damn shame. Because what happens if the minority leader is not interested in helping out the people of his district? You know? Call me old-fashioned. But if you're going to be elected by the people, you should focus on the needs of the people, not just the people of your party. In the House side, there's a similar structure, except the House top officer is the Speaker. Now, interestingly enough, unlike in the U.S. Constitution, to be the Speaker of the House under the Golden Dome, you actually have to be elected member of that chamber. Why do I mention that? Well, there was a lot of rumors going around prior to the last presidential election that once the Republicans got control of the House of Representatives, they were going to make Donald Trump be the Speaker of the House. Interestingly enough, they couldn't have done that. Because in the U.S. Congress, there is no requirement that the United States Speaker be a member of that chamber. But to my knowledge, there has never been a Speaker of the House who has not been an elected member of the House. It's a little FYI. All right, in Massachusetts, the current Speaker of the House is Ron Mariano out of Quincy. Similarly, there is a Speaker pro tempore. Just like in the Senate, the most tenured member of the chamber, person who's been there the longest. The current Speaker pro tempore is Kate Hogan of Stowe. So just like the President pro tempore, if the Speaker is not in the chamber, the Speaker pro tempore presides. And there's also partisanship. There's a House Majority Leader, there's a House Minority Leader. Again, not that you need to remember any of these names. The current majority leader is Michael Moran of Brighton. And the current minority leader is Brad Jones of North Reading. Just like their Senate colleagues, their job is to focus on partisanship. Question. All right, once you have that election in November, the first Tuesday in the first full week in November, once you have that election, January comes around, the first Wednesday in January, you have the new numbered state legislature taking the office. The first order of business is they determine the rules. These rules are the regulations under which each chamber operates. Now, there's nothing in the Constitution that dictates how they operate. But rather, it's up to them. And truth be told, what they generally do is they simply vote to reuse the rules from the last session. But they do have the ability to vote new rules at any point during the session. And each branch is independent of the other. So there's no requirement that the Senate rules and the House rules overlap. They are similar, but they are also different. The only time there's overlap, and as we're going to talk about on whenever I see you next Tuesday, is that unlike the Congress, Massachusetts has a lot of committees that are joint committees. So instead of having a separate House and a separate Senate committee that deals with the same issue, they sit together. So in terms of the rules for the joint committee, both chambers vote on the identical rules. But those are only those that pertain to the joint committees. And the funny thing isn't necessarily the rules, but you do have the ability to go online and you can look through the rules. And in there is often references to changes in the rules. So the last time that I looked through, there was four that caught my eye. In 1983, for example, with the passage of House Rule 81, Massachusetts decided to allow cameras, TV cameras, into the chambers for the first time. So every now and then, if you get Boston Channel 2, Boston PBS, every now and then you can put on Channel 2 and they may be carrying a session inside our general court. The Senate, however, does not have the same rule. It's only the House of Representatives. In 1985, the House voted that the business day goes from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The interesting thing is that the Senate, the same year, amended their rules to start at noon and to stop at 8. But the Senate has since amended it, and now generally they are open 10 to 10. But I'll tell you, only around budget time will you see your legislators in the general court past like 5 o'clock. Because what happens when you try getting out of Boston around 5 o'clock? Oh, yeah. Do you think they want to get stuck in traffic? No. Another interesting change, 2005. The speaker was granted the position to appoint the speaker pro tempore. So this position has only been on the books for 20 years. And they're linked. So the weird thing is if the Speaker of the House vacates their position, the Speaker pro tempore doesn't automatically become the Speaker. No, they lose their job too. And essentially they're appointed when the next Speaker is chosen. And the last one is something you have to be mindful of if you actually go. In 2011, the House voted rule number 93B, which bans members of their staff, or guests from taking pictures or video in the House chamber during formal sessions. So if you do go visit and you're able to go sit up in the seating in above, and look down below. You can't do those goofy selfies with the chamber behind you. The sergeant at arms will come and confiscate your phone. So why do I mention those? Well, those are just examples. They change with the times. Questions? All right, I would love to do the committees, but with 5 minutes left, there's no way in hell we're going to get through it. So, a couple of things. One, my goal is to finish the legislature on Tuesday. Which means, when I finish with the legislature, it's time for test number two. Test number two will be shorter than test number one. And I would like to give it to you on Wednesday, because that's when midterm grades are due. So if I give it to you on Wednesday, I can grade it on Wednesday, and I can add in your grade on exam number two to your midterm grades. But if I can't finish on Tuesday, that means it will be over the weekend again, because that means I'll have to finish on Thursday, and it is what it is. Point number two, I'm going to give you a chance to get extra credit. On Monday, this coming Monday, October 20th, my town is holding its town meeting at 7 o'clock in our high school, middle school auditorium. If you have nothing to do and want to go watch a town meeting, you are welcome to come and attend. If you do show up, I will give you extra credit points. And if you do a 3 to 5 page synopsis of what we talked about, anything that you noticed, things that fascinated you, I will add more points to that. I'll go as far as to say I'll give you 20 extra credit points, which basically I'll add 5 points to all 4 of your exams. If, however, you can't make it, I'm not going to deny you. We don't live stream our town meeting, but it is recorded, and it will be posted on the Town of Sutton Mass's YouTube channel. So if you want to go and watch it afterwards, and I'll mention it next week, when I see you on Tuesday, I will give you 10 points if you do the 3 to 5 page essay after watching it. I think that's fair. I'll give you points just for showing up. If you want to write a paper, I'll give you more points. But if you can't go, I'll still give you access to points. And the other thing, and I'm going to float this out there, the individual who is in this room that has not taken their first exam, if I don't find out when they're going to take the first exam today, I'm going to give them a 0. Because it's not fair to the rest of the group. Because I can't release the grades until that person takes their test. Okay? It's going to be a beautiful weekend this weekend, a nice fall weekend, not like the monsoons we had to deal with last weekend. So go outside, get some fresh air, also study, because your second exam is upon this one.